Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. How are you today on this December 3rd, 2013? It's a really nice day here in New York City. It's a little cool, but not too cool. And I'm just chilling here. Thanks for joining me. It's Giving Tuesday, and I think we'll talk a little bit about more about Giving Tuesday later, what that is and what you might do about it. But right now I want to bring on my first guest, Nick Cooney. He is the author of Change of Heart, What Psychology Can Teach Us About Spreading Social Change. He's the founder and chairman of the board of the Humane League, a vegan advocacy and farm animal protection organization. He works for animals. His work for animals has been featured in hundreds of media outlets, including Time Magazine, The Wall Street Journal, The Los Angeles Times, and he's got a new book called Veganomics, and we're going to be attacking that today. Welcome to It's All About Food, Nick.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Hey, thanks for writing that book. Thanks for giving us all of that information. I'm going to be kind of highlighting giving today. It's Giving Tuesday. And you gave us a lot of great information. But before we start talking about your book, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was good. It was very good. It was with my family, and while they are still eating meat themselves, they're not vegetarian. It was a table with about 12 or 13 vegan dishes and then one little tub of turkey. So, pretty good on their part. So I had a nice Thanksgiving. Thanks.
Very nice. Well, my partner Gary and I made a decision this year that we wanted to stay home, and that kind of generated a little trouble with my parents because they wanted to have everybody together in one place with my brother's family and some other families. And we just this year wanted to make our own food and enjoy it and see what happens. And for 2 days, we cooked with so much joy and no stress. It was just like this zen experience. And the last minute, we invited some people over. And we ended up having this wonderful party from 5 till like 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning. The food lasted until yesterday. And it was one of the best Thanksgivings I ever had.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Well, we might get into talking about the social aspects of being vegetarian and vegan. I'm sure you've got some numbers on it, but let's jump into your book. I love data. I come from a science background myself, and I love collecting data and analyzing it, and that's what you did in this book, Veganomics.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically the point of writing the book was there's hundreds and hundreds of studies out there on vegetarians and vegans themselves, but also on people who just want to try vegetarian meals, cut back on meat consumption. There's actually hundreds of studies on these individuals, who they are, why they do it, the impact it has on them and on the world. They're kind of buried in obscure academic journals and other places like that. So I kind of wanted to go through the scientific record and find every survey and study that I could uncover and see what does that tell us, both in terms of things that could be interesting to us, whether we're vegan, vegetarian, cutting back on our meat consumption, or just know someone who is. So interesting in that regard, but also useful to those who may want to motivate others to make some of those same compassionate changes in their diet. So that was the whole point of the book. And, yeah, it's definitely a data-based book.
Well, I think it's useful for a lot of reasons. Certainly companies or people that have businesses that want to target vegetarians, this is a great marketing tool.
And yeah, I've had some great interest in it from a few vegetarian meat producers who think the data in there could be useful to them. So
yeah, absolutely. And then for some of us who have been vegan for like forever, or it seems like it, it's just great to be able to reflect for a moment to see where the world is today compared to where it was 25 years ago. And a lot has happened, and that's good.
You're right. You know, there is a lot of good happening. Americans really are starting to change their diet. I mean, just in the past 7 years alone, if we look at USDA data, the average per capita meat consumption in the U.S. has dropped by 10%. And that may sound like a fairly small number, and certainly, you know, I hope that that number grows. But just that change alone over the past 7 years does two things. First, it reversed about a 30-year trend of year over year in general, increasing per capita meat consumption in our country. And the other thing it did is just in the past 7 years, as a result of that change, the number of animals being raised on these really, you know, filthy, confining, cruel factory farms and farms in general, the number of animals being raised and killed in these places has dropped by about half of a billion just because of this reduction in average meat consumption. So it really is, we really are starting to see kind of a sea change in how we as Americans eat.
Well, 10%, it's not a big number, but it's significant. And when businesses or politicians see numbers like that, they notice and say, I've got to start paying attention and making some changes.
That is definitely the case. You know, just last week we had the Washington Post releasing the news that Al Gore is the latest celebrity to have gone vegan himself. So, yeah, they're definitely paying attention, both in their politics, I think, and also, for some of them anyway, in their own personal lives.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to hear more about Al Gore and his move, although everybody seems to be quoting this Forbes magazine one-line statement, and I'm waiting to hear some more juicy, meaty details.
Absolutely.
But it's not about celebrities, although celebrities certainly help and politicians help when they move toward a plant-based diet and make some really sensible choices. So I applaud them when they do that. And it's about time, Al.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for years, obviously, he's been one of the most prominent voices for, against, you know, climate change.
Climate change, hello.
It's great that he's finally on board with addressing his own life in terms of one of the biggest things that each one of us contributes to climate change, which is, of course, our diet and the amount of meat we consume.
So you have a very positive spin pretty much throughout this book, which I appreciate it. I like to accent the positive and eliminate the negative, and I'm not going to jump out in song right now. That's for later.
Great.
I don't know if you know that song, but
I hope I'm still on the line when that happens.
Anyway, I'm digressing. But you talk about all the different things that are good because it causes a reduction in animals being killed and less meat being consumed. So, for example, we talk about, we in the veg world, about those folks who choose to eat free range or humanely, quote, humanely, air quotes, humanely raised meat. And it's frustrating. In fact, I was talking to Hope Bohanic recently with her new book, The Ultimate Betrayal, and she's arming people with all kinds of responses when they ask, is it okay to eat organic or free-range meat? And you have kind of a different spin on it, how overall these folks are more receptive to the vegetarian message and they're eating less meat in general.
Yeah, so I think to tease out a couple of things there, yes, if we look to the data and the surveys, they do suggest that people who are concerned with and eating, you know, quote-unquote free-range meat or cage-free eggs or such, these products that either have slightly higher welfare or at least claim to have slightly higher welfare, that those people are more open to going vegetarian and going vegan. They are more likely to eventually make those changes. So, and I think that speaks to the fact that these are individuals who, you know, perhaps some of them are just kind of jumping on a trendy bandwagon, but certainly a lot of them want to, you know, they care about farm animals.
Right.
Like most people, they don't want animals to suffer unnecessarily. And so their understanding is that by switching to free range or cage free, they're now eating animals that lived a good, happy life, at least up until the day that they were killed. And so it's coming from a compassionate concern. Now, of course, as we know, the unfortunate reality is that most of these farms are only very, very slightly better than the standard industrial farm. And so the unfortunate reality is that most animals on these farms are still living a life of day-to-day absolute misery. I think that's why that when these individuals then learn the reality of how animals are treated, even on cage-free or free-range farms, many of them are then willing to change their diet. So I think they're compassionate people who just, you know, again, need to, like all of us, learn more of the reality of what's going on.
All the more reason to be loving, non-judgmental, and compassionate to everyone, because you never know when today's sensitive, free-range, humanely grown meat eater might be a potential vegetarian tomorrow.
Oh, of course. And I'm sure you could roll off lots of people that we know who certainly fell into that very pattern.
Yeah. Okay. Now, but you talk about learning and education, and there were some interesting things that I wanted to talk about, because some of them, maybe I read it wrong, but some of them kind of go against each other. So I've certainly read some of the studies that you've highlighted where high IQ, very intelligent children tend to become vegetarian more than the average, and those who are high IQ or highly educated also tend to become vegetarian more than average. But on the other hand, there are many, many educated people who tend to eat more meat than those who have less schooling.
Yeah.
So those are some really fascinating nuggets there. Can you digest them for me?
Yeah, it's an interesting dichotomy, and I think the reason is this. So we do see, both if we look at children and if we look at adults, that there is a correlation between diet and IQ. And those who have higher IQs when they're younger and those who have higher IQs when they're older are both more likely to be vegetarians. And vegetarians, on average, have a higher IQ level than meat eaters. So that connection is definitely there. It's been shown in a number of studies anyway. But then the reason that things get tricky when we look at education overall is that, just because those with a higher IQ are more likely to go vegetarian, there's going to be competing factors as well. So when it comes to education level overall, if we look at all of those who have higher education and perhaps have a higher IQ as well, many of them go on to have higher paying jobs. And income, as income goes up, meat consumption tends to go up as well. And so that's why if we look at those who are more educated overall, we have that kind of ironic juxtaposition of a higher percentage of them being vegetarian, but among those who eat meat, the average meat consumption is higher than it would be for those of lower education and therefore those of lower income as well. So it's kind of a number of demographic factors that interplay in interesting ways when it comes to diet.
Yeah, and I think it fits in with when you talked about countries that have very little or they don't have the income gap, let's say, so the very poor versus the very rich. The range is there's no big gap in the middle. They tend to promote more equality with humans and with animal species and are more likely to eat less meat. And the countries, unfortunately, like the United States more and more, where there's this big gap between the rich and the poor, the educated and the rich tend to really indulge themselves and eat a lot of meat.
Yeah, that was one of the fascinating findings from the research.
That's very fascinating.
So as I talk about in the book, if you pick the 20 or 25 high-income countries around the world, so of course the U.S., Canada, Germany, so England, so forth, and you put all those names of those countries into a hat, and then you pull two countries out of the hat, and you looked at how much the average wage earner in each of those countries earned, you could not predict from that how much meat is going to be in that country. But if you look at the distribution of wealth in that country, so whether there's an equal roughly equal distribution of wealth, or whether there's those wide gaps between the rich and the poor, that can predict how much meat people eat in those countries. Those countries that are more egalitarian, that have stronger social welfare systems, that basically, display more social concern for the poor and the disadvantaged, those countries are also have lower per capita meat consumption than countries with more of a me, everyone look out for themselves sort of attitude, which is very interesting to see that, again, those that concern for people, that social concern, ties in very much with concern for animals and not wanting to cause them harm.
Right. And you also pointed out, I just keep connecting dots here. One thing leads to the next. So many times people have pointed their finger at vegetarians saying, why do you care so much about the animals? You should care about the people. But your data shows that those who care about animals care about people, probably more so than those who don't care about animals. It's all one big compassionate package.
Yeah, that's right. There are studies where the researchers have put omnivores, vegans, and vegetarians into fMRI machines and showed them images of either humans or animals in neutral situations, but also in distressing situations. Those who are in trouble or hurt or injured or something like that. And then they took fMRI scans of the brains of these individuals as they were seeing these images. And they found that, lo and behold, vegetarians and vegans had more activation in the parts of the brain associated with an empathetic response than did the omnivores, which leads the researchers to conclude that, you know, perhaps vegetarians and vegans have more empathy and more concern, not just for animals, of course, but also for other human beings. And in fact, a number of written studies and questionnaires have found the same thing. So that when people fill out questionnaires that are designed to measure empathy levels and answer a range of questions about, you know, their thoughts in the world and how they live their life, vegetarians and vegans have consistently been shown to have higher levels of empathy. And in fact, as you go up the empathy scale, with each step you go up the scale, the kind of standard empathy scale that researchers use, with each step you go up the scale, your likelihood of being vegetarian doubles. So there is a very strong connection between empathy and altruism and vegetarian or vegan eating.
Okay, so I'm feeling very smug right now and very holier than thou. Because I'm a quarter century old vegan, and I do it for a lot of different reasons. Firstly, for the animals, and then all the other bonuses that come with it. It's great for my health and great for the environment, and et cetera, et cetera. But according to a lot of data, if we're eating a healthy vegan diet, we do better than Americans on a standard American diet health-wise and quality of life-wise. There's all kinds of winning points for this lifestyle. But you mentioned that vegetarians are more depressed. What's that about?
This is true.
I'm depressed hearing this.
It is unfortunate, right? So it's not at least it does not seem from the research, it does not seem like the depression or the anxiety are results of the diet. In fact, quite the opposite. It seems like once people go vegetarian or vegan, their spirits and mood actually improves. But it does seem that people who are prone to depression and anxiety and experience those things and have those issues are more likely to go on to become vegetarian themselves or vegan themselves. And while there's not research on this at this point, my conjecture on it is perhaps that, you know, because of the suffering that they experience, that maybe have heightened sensitivity towards others who are suffering, whether it's other people or animals.
Right.
And perhaps that's part of the reason that they're just more open to these ideas, more willing to identify with others in pain, and therefore more likely to go vegetarian themselves. And then again, the good news is that once they do it, there are studies that show that eating vegetarian, even for those who don't suffer depression or anxiety or any mental health issue, that eating vegetarian increases mental happiness and energy and mental spirits in general.
And maybe some of those folks, before they became vegetarian and had issues with depression, were because they had a great deal of empathy and realized how sick the world can be and how violent it is, and the fact that we don't have control over it can be very depressing.
That could definitely be the case, yeah. And sensitivity to those things could certainly both cause depression and also cause vegetarianism.
Right. And what I like about, personally, my vegan lifestyle is I know I can't control many things out there, but I do have control over my own life, and I don't want to bring violence into my life. I don't want to eat violence. I don't want to support exploitation. And I'm not a perfect person, and sometimes I discover that some product I might have bought is associated with sweatshops or something, and I'm not very happy about it. So, you know, I'm doing the best that I can, but we have control over our own lives, and that's where this vegan lifestyle is so important.
Yeah, you know, it is great to be able to do something that we know has a positive impact on so many individuals. And I look at the numbers on this a bit in the book and try to see, you know, if we look at the USDA data, how many animals do we actually spare from not just, you know, a painful and brutal death, but also a lifetime of day-to-day misery and cramped confinement. And, you know, the good news in terms of us being able to make a positive difference in the world is that we really do make a big impact. As I mentioned, the fact that average meat consumption has gone down has led there to be 500 million fewer animals being raised and killed in the U.S. And if we look at this on an individual level, just cutting chicken alone out of your diet, even after you account for, you know, supply and demand curves and, you know, the price elasticity of these different products and, you know, all the other economic factors, just cutting chicken alone out of your diet, if you're the average American meat eater, will spare about 21 chickens a year from a lifetime of misery. It's 21 individuals who are just as intelligent and emotionally capable as probably the cat or dog that you have at home, or at least close to that. And going, going fully vegetarian will spare about 23 animals a year from this lifetime of day-to-day misery. And so this is a situation where each one of us does have an awful lot of power. We may not be able to change the entire food system, but there are dozens of individuals, you know, smart, friendly individuals if we met them, you know, we would want to pet them and we would want to hang out with them and get our picture taken with them. We can spare dozens of them a year ourselves just by choosing a different, equally tasty, probably even more healthy option when we sit down to eat.
Chickens make up the biggest number of animals that are being killed for food. People don't realize that.
That's correct. You know, we typically think cow, you know, the quintessential American farm animal. But in reality, the number of cows being raised is in the tens of millions in the U.S. The number of chickens is somewhere around over 7 billion per year.
Yeah, it's huge, and especially since chickens weren't something that people really went to as their go-to meat. Maybe, I don't know how many, 100 years ago or more. And here in the United States, people have been manipulated, once again, marketed, and told that chicken is the food to eat, to a point where doctors recommend chicken and fish over beef today because, for health reasons, they say beef isn't healthy, but lean chicken and fish are. And they're wrong on all of that. None of it's healthy. At least not in large quantities. We don't know if a little bit is good or not good, but not in the amounts that Americans are eating today.
Right, and this trend that had been going on for decades of moving from red meat towards chicken has really had devastating consequences when it comes to animal welfare and the amount of suffering in this country and on this planet. So even though Americans are eating only, about 20% more meat today than they were in the 1950s, I may be a bit off, but it's roughly in that range. Even though those in the Western world are only eating about 20% more meat today than they were in the 1950s, the number of farm animals being raised and killed today compared to the 1950s is a several-fold increase. Because people have switched from these bigger animals like cows that you can get many meals out of to smaller animals like chicken, which, you know, have very little meat on their bones. So the number of animals being raised and killed for food in this country has skyrocketed because of somewhat of a public shift towards chicken. Now, thankfully, in the past 6 or 7 years, we've seen even per capita chicken consumption starting to drop off. It's dropped off, I think, about 78% over the past 7 years. So we are seeing a shift in that regard. You know, one thing I point out in the book is that for those who, you know, care about animals and want to prevent them from suffering, but don't feel that they could go fully vegetarian right now, the best first step to make is really not to go switch to free range or anything like that, rather to just cut out chicken as your first step. Because just by cutting out chicken, regardless of the rest of what you do with your diet, just by cutting out chicken, you'll spare up to a couple dozen animals per year from misery. And so that's really a great first step for those who want to help animals but don't think they could go fully vegetarian at this point.
I'm wondering if you came up with this expression, but a lot of people talk about having a sweet tooth, and you say that Americans have a meat tooth.
I don't know of anyone else having used it, so perhaps I coined that term in the book. But we have the highest per capita meat consumption of any country on earth. You know, in the book I note that the tiny country of Luxembourg is the only one that actually eats a bit more. But this fall I actually was in Luxembourg and I found out that that's quite misleading because a third of the population there, the people eating food there, don't actually live there. They just come in, work there during the day, eat, and then leave. And so it kind of distorts the data. So the real reality is that America does have the highest per capita meat consumption of any country on the planet right now.
Whoa. Well, yeah. There yeah. You go. Well, where can people find out more about Veganomics and you, Nick Cooney?
Sure. So the book itself, you can check out veganomicsbook.com and read some sample chapters, see more what the book is about, and if you're interested, certainly to order it. And my information is up there as well. So if anyone wants to get in touch, my email address is on the site. Again, it's veganomicsbook.com.
Terrific. Thank you. Thank you so much for writing this book. I really enjoyed getting all of those numbers together and kind of confirmed a lot of things that I had already felt was true, but it's great to have a resource to go to and say, see, it is true.
Hey, well, thanks so much for having me on and for doing your show.
Okay. And now maybe I'll sing a verse of Accentuate the Positive. What do you think of that?
That sounds wonderful.
So we started this group, my partner Gary and I, called the Swingin' Gourmets, and we have put together a vegan cabaret musical, and we've started to present it there, here, and there, and we're working more on it. And the point of it is to put a very positive, joyful spin on eating plant foods, because it is so loving and joyful, and although there's a lot of horrible things that we talk about, because there's a lot of horrible things going on in the world, I personally like to focus on all the benefits and the joys. And we put together this show. We tell a few stories in it, and it's really fun. You can learn more about it at swingandgourmets.com. But we took one of these songs, Accentuate the Positive, and we sing a little of it. You've got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative, don't mess with Mr. In-Between. And that's just a little tease. I'm not going to sing anymore, but if you want to know more about the Swing Gourmets and hear us sing this tune, you'll have to contact me at that website. Anyway, Nick, thanks for joining me, and all the best to you with your book. We're going to take a little break and bring on our next guest in a little bit. But before we go, I wanted to just talk a minute about Giving Tuesday. So this is a day on December 3rd where after Thanksgiving, where we eat a lot, and then a couple of days later where apparently we consume a lot going to stores, the 92nd Y here in New York City came up with this concept of Giving Tuesday, where people have the opportunity to give to a bunch of organizations that are on the Giving Tuesday website. And just think about giving as we head into the bigger holidays coming on later this year. And I like the concept. Personally, I think every day should be Giving Day, not just this one Tuesday. And it's wonderful to give to all kinds of charitable organizations. But financial giving is not the only way to give. You can give of yourself, your time, volunteering, your love, your compassion. There are so many different ways to give. And we may talk about that a little bit in the next portion of this show, where we're going to be talking about effortless meditation. But when we take a little break, just think about giving. It's such a wonderful thing, because we find that when we give, we get back a lot more. And that's not really the motivation behind it, of course, but it's just a wonderful benefit. Okay, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a few.